welcome to the teaching ministry of North Coast Church in Vista, California. We invite you to please open your Bibles as we join Pastor Chris Brown for today's message.
Happy New Year, everybody. Cool, cool. Hope you had a great New Year. For us, a lot of fun. We got to spend it with a group of friends and just kind of coming in the New Year. But it amazes me. A bunch of Christian couples get together, and once someone gets the idea to start doing group games or board games like husbands versus wives, how competitive some people get. And the trash talking that starts happening. And I'm like, these are all people from our church. And yet I couldn't believe the stuff that was just coming out of my mouth. And I'm like, man, it's just a game, but we had to win, and just a fun time of breaking up and goofing off with a bunch of friends. Doing New Year's at 9 o'clock because we had a bunch of young kids that were all at one house, and so we did the East Coast New Year's so they could celebrate and then put them all to bed. And then around midnight, there's still three kids up, Selah, Karis, and Barrick Brown, and stayed up all the way through both New Year's, stayed up through the drive home. We thought as soon as we get in the car, they're going to be out. But up, and then about 1:15 to 1:30 in the morning, we are trying to talk them into bed. And I'm like, this is crazy. Why do we do New Year's? And once a year, fun time, celebration. And I hope you had a good time with your family. For us, we're just kind of making new traditions as we go. Brings us into what we're heading in today, and just kind of a unique passage. It's our second to last day in the book of Acts. Next weekend, we're going to finish off this book. But on this one, we got one chapter we're going to camp out on, and it might just set you up for this new year. And maybe what you're currently going through, what you're going to go into, maybe some of the goals that you have. And so I just really hope as we jump into this, you just open up yourself and just listen. So let's open in a word of prayer. Father, I just thank you for today, and God, that you brought us here. Regardless of why we're here, maybe we're here because we desire to learn from you. Maybe we're here because it's what you do as a Christian on the weekends. Maybe we're here because we're feeling guilty about stuff in our life. Maybe we're here just because we decided to start checking it out again. Maybe we're here simply because of an invite or the person next to us. But God, regardless, thanks that we're here. And now that we're here in whatever venue we're listening or watching this at, God, I just pray that you'd speak to us, that we turn to your book once again. God, I believe written by your Spirit through men, and it's valid for our life today. So you may give us the ears, the wisdom, the intellect, the heart to open and hear. Not what a church or a pastor has to say, but what God, Creator, has to say to creation. And God, if there's something that needs to change, may we be the ones that change. And may you give us your strength and your courage to change our lives, to mold and fit what you want us to be in your name. Amen. It actually began toward the end of July, 1980. What started as a tropical storm quickly got the title of Hurricane Allen. As it started to build and build, as the winds and gusts, and as the size of this thing on the radar just continued to swell and spread, it moved across the warm waters of the Gulf of Mexico, and it just started picking up speed. It was one of those storms that everyone was bracing themselves. To the best of their ability, they tried to forecast where that puppy's going to hit shore, but no one quite knew where. I remember for us it was big because I was living in southeast Texas at that time, a little city called Beaumont, not far from the Gulf of Mexico at all. And we knew it was coming. We just didn't know it was going to come right through our backyard. I don't remember if it was a Sunday night or a Wednesday night. I remember it was a church night. I remember at that time a family committed to this little Southern Baptist church that you went to church come hell or high water. That's kind of what was said. Well, we didn't know how literal that was going to be this night. At a night where everyone's staying home and everyone should stay home, my mom packed us all in the station wagon, and me and my other three brothers and sisters, we jump in and we head to church. I had to be around fifth grade at this time, maybe about 11 years old, and we start heading to church. I knew things got tough when they came in the middle of church service and said, people, we need to end. We need to cut church and let you get out of here because, man, it's bad outside. See, you never stop church. You don't miss church in a little Southern Baptist, Southeast Texas church. Unless the Cowboys made the Super Bowl, church went on 24/7. Yeah, it's kind of close to home, doesn't it? I remember jumping in the station wagon and driving. I remember the excitement of the rain that was coming down in such velocity, you couldn't see raindrops. It was just a blanket of water, hardly any visibility. Every time the car went through huge puddles and these big waves, and we were cheering. I mean, I was loving this moment. Until the further we tried to get toward our house, the more serious Mom became. until she got to the point where there's no cheering, no talking. Everyone just sit there. Be still. Shut up. Everyone sat, and I realized, Mom's scared. And if Mom's scared to drive, something's going on. Different roads we'd try to go down had cars that were flooded out and stopped, and we'd back up and try different routes home. Some of the lower roads were already closed off. People out there and policemen with flashlights just waving people to go around. And I remember the seriousness setting in. I remember wishing Dad was driving. No offense against Mom. It's just Mom's the more emotional side. And all my years of knowing Dad, which is all my years, I've never seen that man shaken by anything. But Dad had gone up north to Iowa to find a job and start up and just get things going until he could bring the family up. And so he was states away. And I remember going down one road, and the water got higher and higher and higher until the car sputtered, until the car stalled, and you couldn't get it started again. And we sat there. And Mom tried to calm us all down. Just sit there. Just sit there. We're going to be okay. And the water kept rising and rising and rising. And the door jams on the bottom of the car, water started coming in. And then water would get all over the place where your feet were supposed to go. And you could stomp in the car and make puddles. And I thought that was really cool. Until Mom told us to sit on the back of the seat. And we sat up on the back of the seats. And water came all the way up to the top of the seats. And that's where Mom said, guys, we've got to get out of the car. Everyone get in the back. We're going out one door. And everyone hold on to me and your big brother. And my older brother, 6 years older than me at the time, was probably about a freshman, sophomore in high school. And he was a tank in high school. And I thought, that's the most solid thing I know right now. I'm clutching him. And we all grabbed a piece of my brother, and he grabbed us. And my mom tried her best to get her arms around us. And we stepped out of the car, and the water was up to about my chest. And it was moving far quicker than I thought it was going to be moving. You could feel all kinds of stuff bumping into you. My mom was freaking out because one thing about living in Texas, she was petrified of reptiles. And I think you would know, in a hurricane, the snakes and the water moccasins, the copperheads, they're not like just out cruising. I mean, they're as freaked out as everybody else. But every little thing that bumped you, my mom gave one of those, which just heightened the pitch black, the pouring storm, the water up. And I'm sitting there, the only thing I can hear is thunder, lightning, and Mom, and I'm just gripped onto my brother. We had stopped down below a hill, and we were making our way up this hill. There was another little church up on top that had a group of maybe 30 or 4 people standing around it. They, too, had been flooded out and just kind of got higher ground. Some of the men saw this little huddled mass coming through the water, and they ran down and picked up each of us and just kind of helped tote us up the hill. I remember sitting up there and looking at everyone else that was washed out, and I was thinking, man, this is like a movie. I don't know what kind of movie, but this is like a movie. And once we were on ground, I thought, this is one of the coolest nights of my life. And just riding out the storm that night in the little church of Hurricane Allen. If you ever been through moments like that, where you were in the heart of something like that, man, you remember the details. You remember the moments. Even back to 1980, I remember that night clear as a bell. I can't tell you who my teacher was. I can't tell you the address of the house we lived in, phone number, anything like that. But man, I remember that night. I think that's why when we get to the book of Acts, chapter 27, the entire chapter, is given to one storm. And people ask why. We've gone through chapters in this book that have covered, one chapter sometimes covers 5 years of travel. And people have asked, why do you think the second to last chapter spends all of its time just on a storm? I'm not sure. First reason is because a bunch of guys were in the storm and they're writing this book. They're going to write about a storm that they were in. That's what guys do. I think secondly, maybe Luke, the doctor that's taken such incredible detailed notes about everything we've read so far, has such an impression about Paul, our hero in this story, that he says, man, you got to see another side of this guy when the waters got high. Or maybe it's just the plain fact that this year, a lot of us, whether we're in one right now or we're going to be heading into one, need to take a look at a storm and sit down and say, man, what do I do in the midst of this? When the waters rise, when the winds blow, when the lightning strikes, when I feel hopeless, when I feel like this is getting up over my head, what do we do in the midst of those situations? Whatever the reason, we're jumping in. It's Acts chapter 27. If you haven't gotten your Bible so far, turn there. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts. We've done 26 chapters so far, 20 weeks so far. And we've come to this. We're going to kind of bypass the first 6 verses. Basically, all it says is Paul, last we left him was in Caesarea. He was talking to the governor of Judea and the king that was in charge of the whole southeastern province of Rome. And he was telling them why the Jewish leaders hate him and want to kill him. He says, because I claim that there was a Messiah. Everything last week came down to this dead man named Jesus. What do you do with him? Paul claims he's alive. In fact, claims that he talked with him, he walks with him. Everyone else claims he was just a guy, a great teacher, and he's dead. Rome doesn't know what to do. They're confused. Paul says, I want my day in court. Send me to Rome. I'm a Roman citizen. So they put him on a boat in Caesarea. From Caesarea, we'll lose blue dots. I don't know if you can see him that well. But he jumps out into Caesarea on his boat, and he heads up north. They stop briefly in Sidon, one-day journey, and then they head up the coast. The Bible says because of the winds and all that was going on, they stayed to the shoreline. Instead of sailing straight across the Rome, they had to hug the shore. They land in this little place over here called Myra, in what's now currently modern-day Turkey. They stop in Snidus, right here. Cool name of a town. And as they're in Snidus, they still can't sail. The wind pushes them to the lee side of Crete. And as they come around Crete, they find a little place called Fair Haven in Lasea. Fair Haven's a harbor. And we're going to pick up the story what happens there. This little boat for days is trying to make its way to Rome, and yet the winds are just pushing it. Now, when I say little, don't get in mind the 16-foot ship. We're going to realize there's 276 men on this boat. So it's a good-sized sailing vessel. It's a great size to handle the open sea, but it also makes a huge sail itself when the wind starts pushing against it. And this is the story. That was just the intro? Oh, my goodness. Acts 27:7. Luke still writes, we made slow headway for many days. We had difficulty arriving off Snidus, and when the wind did not allow us to hold our course, we sailed to the lee of Crete, opposite Salmone. We moved along the coast with difficulty, and we came to a place called Fair Havens near the town of Lasea, that little island out there with the blue dot in the middle. As they get to the downwind side of the island, they find a harbor. And now we've got a decision. Much time had been lost in verse 9, and sailing had already become dangerous because by now it was after the fast. So Paul warned them. And before we get into the warning, there's a little date thing here that lets you know what's going on. There's a little date thing here that I wouldn't know of unless I spent time just researching and looking at what's going on in the Mediterranean Sea and at the time in Israel. After the fast would have been October 5th in the year 59 AD. It was after October 5th. By the time they've sailed, it's probably already mid-October, close to the start of November. Now, here's what you have to know about first century sailing in the Mediterranean Sea at that time. All sailing becomes dangerous from mid-September to mid-November. Mid-September to mid-November, flip a coin. Man, if you're really heading out there, be safe, because you're getting into some dangerous seas. From the middle of November to February or March, absolutely no sailing takes place. Because of the winter storms and the winds that would come up and blow across the open of the Mediterranean, absolutely no boats were out in the water for those months. At least 4 months, all sailing shut down. They're in the danger zone, and they're heading to the no-sail zone. They find themselves on this little island called Fair Haven, kind of an ironic name, as we're going to see. And it's time for a discussion. It's been slow going so far, and the winds have been against us, and the winds have been picking up. And here's what Paul warns them about in verse 10. Men, I can see that our voyage is going to be disastrous and bring great loss to the ship and the cargo and to our own lives also. But the centurion, instead of listening to what Paul said, followed the advice of the pilot and of the owner of the ship. And since the harbor was unsuitable to winter in, the majority decided that we should sail on, hoping to reach Phoenix and winter there, because it's always sunny in Phoenix. And this was a harbor, that was lame. And this was a harbor in Crete facing both southwest and northwest. Paul stands up and says, guys, this is treacherous. Now remember, Paul's just not some missionary guy that we've seen the last 25 years of his life walk across here and talk to people. Paul's a guy that's logged over 3,500 miles on the Mediterranean Sea so far. 2 Corinthians 11:25. You can write it if you want under shipwreck in your note and look at it. 2 Corinthians 11:25 was written probably 2 years before this voyage. And in 11:25, Paul says, guys, I've been shipwrecked 3 times already for the faith. This is a guy that has 3 shipwrecks under his belt, has sailed 3,500 miles. This is a guy that has some great experience on the open water saying, guys, this isn't a good time of year. The way the winds have been changing, the way the weather's setting in, we shouldn't sail on. From here on out, there's a lot of open water. Let's just hunker down. But the master of the ship says, no, it's my ship. It's my cargo. I say we go on. And the majority sides with him. The majority looks and goes, there's a podunk town here. We're not going to spend 4 months in a podunk harbor. Let's at least make it to Phoenix. Let's go. 2 opposing sides. Kind of a lose-lose scenario. And everyone heads off. And verse 13. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they thought they had obtained what they wanted. Man, I got that underlined. I got little brackets on it, and I got a little star next to it in my Bible. How many of my shipwreck stories start with that? When I finally found what I thought I really wanted, let me tell you what happened. So much of the crisp brown darkness in my life and the times that I would look at and go, oh, man, I hope no one finds out about this harbor, all started with something in my life that I said, man, it seemed right to me. I went on my gut instincts. I thought this is what I really wanted. I thought she is who I really wanted. I thought this direction, I thought this job, I thought this car, I thought this whatever is what I really wanted. So they weighed anchor, and they sailed along the shore of Crete. And before very long, a wind of hurricane force called the Northeaster, we'll call it Allen, swept down from the island. The ship was caught by the storm and could not head into the wind, so we gave way to it, and we were driven along. As we passed to the lee of a small island called Cotta, we were hardly able to make the lifeboat secure. And when the men hoisted it aboard, they pressed ropes under the ship itself just to hold it together, fearing that they would run aground on the sandbars of Sardis. And they lowered the sea anchor and let the ship be driven along. We took on such a violent battering from the storm that the next day they began to throw the cargo overboard. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and the storm finally continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. Okay, you're in a bad spot. Somewhere in sailing from this little island across the big open waters of the Mediterranean, they give up even trying to direct the ship. They throw the cargo overboard, anything that's going to weigh them down in the water because fear of just their life. They finally take the ship's tackle, everything that's not being used, and because they aren't using the sails and ropes anymore, they throw that overboard just to stay afloat. And I love that little line in there. When neither sun nor stars appeared for many days and the storm continued raging, we finally gave up all hope of being saved. There's two things in there. You couldn't see the sun. You couldn't see the stars for many days. That's not just a description of how black the storm was and the lack of visibility. What they're trying to say, remember, in first century terms is we lost all navigational devices. Everything we use to plot our course and where we are in that time and date all depended on two things, sun in the day, stars at night. And for many days, all of our navigational equipment was blacked out. And finally, we gave up hope. I didn't even catch that word until this week looking at it. We finally gave up all hope. This is Luke writing. I wonder, is Luke trying to tell you what most of the men on board felt? And if so, why didn't he say the men gave up hope? I think Luke's including himself here. Hey, I was cashing in on this one. I thought for sure I was gone. We gave up hope. We were done. We've heard about storms like this. They already mentioned they feared the shoals of Sardis. They already mentioned that they're going to get blown down somewhere in this direction off the north continent of Africa. And all your sandbars and shoals of Sardis were basically their Bermuda Triangle at that time. It was a huge graveyard of ships where pieces of timber and cargo would eventually float up to shore, but none of the people on board were ever found. And everyone knew, never get to the northern continent of Africa in the midst of a storm. You're gone. And that's what they settled in on. That's where we're going to die. Have you ever been there? You ever been to a place in life where you just figured, this is it? This is how it's going to be? This is what life's going to be like? I guess this is the way the marriage will always be. I guess this is where we're going to live. I guess this is the financial situation. I guess this is the debt I'll have with me all my life. I guess whatever it is, fill in the blank. Have you ever been in that place in life where instead of struggling and trying to fight it, you just thrown everything you can overboard and said, forget it all? And you've just resigned yourself to the fact that this is it. This is it. Well, everyone on board is there except one. And I love verse 21. After the men had gone a long time without food, Paul stood up before them and said, men, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. It's the ultimate I told you so. After days, everyone's like, well, we're dying here. And Paul stands up and goes, guys, listen to me. I told you so. Remember back in Crete when I said it's dangerous, it's perilous, we shouldn't sail? That was me. Now, I don't think he's just doing that to rub his face in it. That doesn't strike me as anything we've seen from Paul. I think what he's trying to say is, guys, I had really good advice and you didn't listen to it. I want to remind you, I had really good advice that you didn't listen to. Because now I'm about to give you some more advice that I really hope this time you listen to. I love the I told you so line. Man, you should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. Then you would have spared yourselves this damage and loss. But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost. Only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, the angel of God, whose I am and whom I serve, stood beside me and said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar. And God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, we must run aground on some island. Okay, he doesn't have all the details. Guys, we're going to live. The boat's going to be lost. We're going to lose everything, but we're going to live. Somewhere out there, some island, I don't know, but we're going to run aground. But guys, take courage. Because God is here with me in the storm, stood beside me, the God of who I am and who I serve. I just want to see what's on the faces of the guys on the boat. Do they even care anymore? You got nothing else to believe in. Might as well just chip it in on Paul's God, because they've already resided the fact that they're going to die. And this is when the degree of it sets in. Verse 27. On the 14th night, we were still being driven across the Adriatic Sea. Did you get that? How many days? 14 days in the eye of the storm. 14 days. On the 14th night, we are still being driven across the seas. Who knows where? We don't know where. On the 14th night, they get close to ground somewhere. I don't know if they know that because of the sound of the breakers they can hear on the shore. They start doing little soundings where you're going to have a measured rope that you drop down with the weight to see how far the bottom is. A lot of times, just hand over hand, and you have it marked out on how far it comes. We're at 90 meters. We're at 60 meters. We're at 30 meters. Okay, we're getting close to land somewhere. We find out at dawn things are about to change. We'll jump in on verse 33. Just before dawn, actually. Just before dawn, Paul urged them all to eat. For the last 14 days, he said, you have been in constant suspense and you have gone without food. You haven't eaten anything. Now I urge you to take some food. You need it to survive. Not one of you will lose a single hair from his head. And after he said this, he took some bread and he gave. That's all we're given. He gave thanks to God in front of them all. Then he broke it and began to eat. Are you kidding me? Okay, when I get to heaven, this is another one that I want to rent. I just want to watch it. But I just want to fast forward it before I see the storm up to this place. I want to know what that prayer was about. You know, 14 days. You've thrown everything overboard that you can. You haven't eaten in 14 days. Probably because, A, you can't prepare food in a storm like that, and B, you're so green and seasick, no one's keeping anything down. Physically, mentally, emotionally, you are toast at this time. 14 days. You've already resided the fact that this is where we all die. Paul gives up, so you guys need to eat. You're going to need some energy here to survive. And he picks up bread, and before he passes, he goes, wait, I just want to give thanks. Really? For what? Well, we need the rain. You know, it's been dry recently, and I'm sure. Are you kidding me? What? What are you praying for? God, thanks. If these guys haven't eaten in 2 weeks, they all think they're going to die, and I got a loaf of bread. What? Give thanks. People, I love that line. I want to know exactly what the prayer was about. Maybe it was a simple fact that Paul said, I'm alive, I have bread in my hand, and you promised me something. And outside of that, I got Jack. Outside of that, I got nothing to go on. Outside of that, I've already told the guys, we are losing everything here. The ship is going down. We're losing all the cargo and all of our possessions and everything. I'm alive, I got a piece of bread, and I got your promise. I'm going to give thanks. Man, I hope I could say I was there. Man, I hope I could say if I ever come to a place in time where I've lost everything and I know I'm about to lose everything, that I can still stop and say, God, thanks. Now, it's easy for me as your pastor to stand up here and go, guys, I have that heart. I have that faith. People, I don't have a clue what I would do in that situation. I pray to God I'm never in that situation. If I am, I hope I have the faith the same. But you know what, God? This isn't my life. You have a promise of heaven, and that comes later. And for now, I'm still alive and I have bread, so thanks. But man, I just don't know. I can hope and say I'm there. But I know about this. I'm reading about a guy that's standing there. And watch what one guy's thanks does in the midst of the storm. Verse 36. They were all encouraged and ate some food themselves. 276 men on board. One guy stands up in the midst of a facing death situation and starts giving thanks. And everyone else is encouraged because of one man's faith in the midst of a storm. Sometimes I make storms all about me. Sometimes I make storms all about Chris because, I mean, let's just face it, most of life is just about Chris. And so in the midst of it, why would a storm be any other situation? And sometimes I fail to realize maybe the storm that you're in or going through has absolutely nothing to do with you. But simply in the midst of it, there are other people that need to be encouraged and need to see a light. And the absolute best place to be a light is in the midst of darkness. How many of you want to sign up for that? No one? Come on. Some of you here got it. Chris, I'll lose everything to be in God's will. No. God's will is to bless my life with everything. That's how I like my Christianity. To be in a place of saying, God, as long as I have your promise and I'm in your will, I'll give thanks. And if it means in the midst of losing everything, my thanks doesn't change. Man, I hope I could say that. Paul stops, gives thanks. Everyone is encouraged. 37, altogether there were 276 of us on board. And when they had eaten as much as they wanted, they lightened the ship by throwing the grain into the sea. The last stuff they had on board, and the grain goes. It's what you were saving. It's what you're holding on to. It was that thing in your life that you pray God never takes. It's that thing in your life that has your value, your identity, your reputation. I mean, that's the grain. It's that last-ditch effort of who I am. It is what's going to pay for this journey. It's what's going to pay for the future journeys. It is that cargo. It is that value system that we have. And we will throw off everything and get rid of everything, but don't touch the grain. I mean, that's the moneymaker. Don't touch the grain. And they finally got to a place where that's gone to. I know we never want to be there, but there's something to be said to come to a place in life where we can let go of everything, whether it's literally taken away or we truly let go of everything. When we're okay with losing the ship, as long as I still got God, there's something to be said for the freedom in that moment. And the money gets thrown over. And when daylight came, they did not recognize the land, but they saw a bay with a sandy beach where they decided to run the ship aground if they could. Cutting loose the anchors, they left them in the sea and at the same time untied the ropes that held the rudders. Then they hoisted the foresail to the wind and made for the beach. But the ship struck a sandbar and ran aground, and the bow stuck fast and would not move, and the stern was broken to pieces by the pounding of the surf. And the soldiers planned to kill the prisoners to prevent any of them from swimming away and escaping. We've looked at this before in jail scenes. A Roman soldier, if he let a prisoner escape, would take on the penalty that prisoner had to pay. And if you let 100 or so prisoners, I mean, you can just imagine. They're like, just kill them all. Just kill them all. But 43, the centurion wanted to spare Paul's life. And he kept them from carrying out their plan. He ordered those who could swim to jump overboard first and get to land. And the rest were to get there on planks or on pieces of the ship. In this way, everyone reached land in safety. We'll pick up next week what happens on that little island. We'll find out it's a little island called Malta. On our map, we blew it up just so that you could see it. Otherwise, it would just be a speck out there. This little piece of land sailing from here 14 days to here in the midst of a storm. All of them thinking that they're going to end up somewhere down off here in the continent of Africa. There is one little piece of land and about a 550-mile stretch. There is one little dot of sand, and they hit that sucker dead on. Otherwise, it was another 220 miles that I'm sure the boat and the crew would have never made. Those that can swim, swim. Others jump on anything that floats and kick and paddle. And they all hit the beach. So a cool story, firsthand experience of Luke writing it. What do we do with it? I want to give you just a couple things to jot down and maybe be able to take home with you today. I want to be careful, though, because it's easy to say this and go, well, here's what it means for us today. This is a literal description of what happened in the storm. Once again, the incredible intellect and note-taking of a guy named Luke to give us these little, even the littlest tiny of islands like Cauda that they passed by on the third day. A guy that in detail gives you the descriptions of what happened. He'll name the people at the beginning that are even on the boat with them. This is a literal description of what happened. And so I'm not trying to say, boy, there's spiritual things in here about our life tonight. No, but I think there's some things that can apply. Not to be taken literal, but things to look at and go, okay, how does this work for the so-called storms in our life? The first thing is why we experience storms. And I'm not talking about hurricanes. Weather patterns will tell us why we experience them. I'm talking about the financial, the relationship or lack of relationship, the health that's going on, the bitter disputes between family, in-laws, exes, children, fathers, mothers, the hurt and the pain. Why do we experience storms? Why do we experience the hurt and pain that comes with life? If we have a God that's so loving, with great promises that we like to call on about God helping us and being there with us, why are they there? Let me run down just six things kind of quickly for you. Number one, the obvious sin. Sin, and if you want to put next to it, the consequences of it. Man, the Bible has made it very clear. Obedience with God will always precede God's blessings in the Christian life. We want to walk with one hand on God and one hand on what God says and the other hand on what we want to do instead. Well, I guarantee you there's going to be a separation of relationship. The wages of sin is death, separation from God. And it boggles me how many people are frustrated with God because of what they're going through. And it has nothing to do with God, but everything to do with their own choices and the consequences. One of the greatest men that's ever lived in the Old Testament, a guy named David. 1 and 2 Samuel will just kind of lay out his whole story. In 2 Samuel 11, he's the king of God's people, the nation of Israel. He finds himself in the palace. All the men are off to war. Have no clue why David's not out with the men. But he happens to be on the balcony, checking out the neighbor's wife next door. She's bathing on the rooftop. And once he lets that sexuality and fantasy life into his head, man, he knows he's not shutting it down. It's just a one-night affair that no one will know. And by the way, he's the king. He's the alpha dog. And so basically he has the right to her if he wants. And that's the mindset that starts setting in. Little does he know that she'll become pregnant with that one-night stand. So of course he has to go and kill her husband to cover it up, and he kills him in battle. The very next chapter, the prophet Nathan comes and says, David, you've blown it. And David's convicted and says, I have. I've sinned against God. I'm sorry. And the prophet says, you're forgiven. Jesus' cross covers that sin. But David, man, there's consequences. Sexually, your family will be one of the most dysfunctional in all of history. His oldest son will rape his stepsister in dad's own palace. And dad won't do anything about it for 2 years, because how can dad talk to his first son about sexuality when he's had an affair with the neighbor's wife? He just can't do that. And he lets it go. Second son kills first son for raping sister. We never hear from sister again. Second son will be so disappointed with dad, he'll try to take over the kingdom before it's time. And he'll end up being killed by dad's guards. Third son will be killed by fourth son, who's been promised the kingdom. See how this thing goes? Okay, you're forgiven, but there's consequences. Some of the storms in our life, we might be forgiven, we might be walking with God, but we are still paying for choices because of relationships, because of marriages, because of taking gentle breezes that we thought had our name on it long ago, and we still have consequences. And people, that is life and the justice of life. And sin has consequences. And God just can't take that away. I think secondly, our own mistakes. I'm not talking about sin mistakes. I'm just talking about our boneheaded mistakes. I bought a house in North County 3 years ago. But that was a great financial decision. Now I plan on having my retirement party here in the Edge in 30 years and living in that house, so it doesn't really matter now. But I'm like, man, could we have done something different on that one? Renting right now, you're a genius. Our own mistakes, and not just our own mistakes, but the mistakes of others or the choices of others. Paul and Luke are in the storm, not because they decided to go, but because a Roman government is clueless, sends them to Rome because a bunch of Jewish leaders want to kill him, and so Paul can't be a free man. He's in the storm because of other people's choices. Some of you are walking around with such huge heartache and brokenness, and it's not a sin issue. In fact, it might not even be something you have done. It's someone else's choices. It's someone else's sin and evil that has happened in your life. And doggone it, there's consequences. And you're a repercussion of that. Someone stood. And whether it was the right thing to do or not, they pledged till death do us part. And yet somewhere along the way, they said, no, I'm checking out of this. Long before that option's going to come up. And you're left with the pain and the heartache. Some of you are in a venue today just sitting there and you realize the hurt and the pain is still because of what he did to you. How many years ago? The broken heart, the hurt, the molestation, the pain that we carry with us because of somebody else's sinful choices. I think the third reason we have storms in our lives is just simply life happens. I can't tell you why those cells are there. I can't tell you why they formed into a tumor. I can't tell you why that life is taken or why you're going through what you're going through right now. I just got to tell you, life happens. The amazing thing is, with all these things, we still blame God. And from the very beginning, he said, this was never my choice. This was never my plan. I've given you all free will, and other people's free will and your own will affect your life. I've written about that. I told you squarely. And there's consequences of that. And from the very beginning of sin, there comes death and disease into the world. I think fourthly, bad advice. In Paul's story, they listened to the wrong experts. Paul's trying to tell them, we can't go. Another expert goes, it's fine to go. And the majority says, let's go. I can't tell you how tough it is today to listen to the majority. And the plethora of bad experts we have out there today. Come on. Are you really going to follow your life, your sexuality, your relationships, your family, your business practices, your finances, according to a book as archaic as this? Grow up. We are so much smarter nowadays. We understand sexuality so much better nowadays. Just be safe. And as long as with adults and consenting people, enjoy yourself. Just be safe. It's your life. It's your finances. You've earned it. Get all that you can right now. Put it into yourself and your life. I mean, no one else is going to look out for you. And we have so many experts today. And quietly, I think on our ship, there's one like a voice of Paul who represents God just saying, guys, I think this is disastrous. Yeah. But look, everyone's going. And the majority are all okay. We're going to head out. Matthew 6:19, Jesus even warned about this. This famous Sermon on the Mount. In front of what must have been a couple thousand people, he said, guys, listen, Jesus himself says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal, where the market can crash, where the housing market can just spiral. Little parentheses there. But he says, store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy, where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. You want to be someone that stands in the midst of our current economic crisis and what's going on and say, guys, I can give thanks? Go, you're a weirdo. No, my value is not in this stuff. I have a promise. I have a hope. I have an eternity. And I'm not going to invest it all in this little blip on my lifeline called earthly possessions. Let the ship go down. I'll chuck the grain with you. Not the grain. You guys remember how hard I've been working, what I've been storing? I got the grain. Paul's, oh, I got my life. I got the Twinkie. Let's pray. What? Because he's the only guy on the ship that has a value system that's not going to be turned away by moth or rust or hurricane or things. You try to talk this fast for 8 minutes. And Jesus finishes the Sermon on the Mount and says, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Jesus says, there will always be two masters in your life. One saying, go this way, and the other one going, no, I think that's disastrous. The majority will probably say, yeah, let's go this way. Jesus says, look, you've got to decide right now who you're serving. You can't serve both. You can't live in this world and take on the value system in this world and what the world says about you and your value and your money and your finances and your relationships and your sexuality and your social life and everything and say, I'm going to do this just with a little bit of God. Jesus to himself says, you can't do it. I guarantee you, you're going to have more passion about one than the other. And it'll probably be where the majority's going and listen to bad experts and bad advice. I think fifthly, being impatient. We rely on circumstances, not principles. We rely on circumstances, not our principles. When a gentle south wind began to blow, they thought they had obtained what they wanted. How many times we look back and go, man, I thought that's what I wanted. I thought that's who I wanted. Boy, at the time, I sure thought that was the right thing to do. We rely on circumstances that seem right to us. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 says, man, you trust in God. Don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, simply acknowledge God. In all your ways, follow him. He'll direct those paths. Because I tell you, the circumstances I see in life, more often than not, are going to be misleading. And then six, yeah, God's will. Sometimes there's storms simply because God wants to test us. Maybe he wants to strengthen us. Maybe he wants us to be a light for everyone else on deck. The amazing thing is, no matter what the cause of the storm, we always blame God. I blame God for sin. I blame God for my mistakes. I blame God for the consequences of my past mistakes. I blame God for whatever's going wrong because he should be fixing it. And the whole time he goes, you ought to read it. Told you it was coming. Told you the past. But blame me if you want. Okay, what we can lose in the storm. Again, we take a little jump here, and maybe not to be taken too literally, but I love where they just threw it on anchor and said, hey, we were blown by it. I think the thing is, we drift from our goals and values. Once we get in the midst of a storm, whatever crisis is, we seem to lose sight of our goals and values. We are so focused on the storm and just staying afloat, we lose sight of our eternal and Christian goals and values. You know what blows me away? Running into people that just I haven't seen around North Coast for months, maybe a year. Hey, I haven't seen you guys in a while. Yeah, we've been going through a really tough time. You mean like with people at the church? Oh, no, just some stuff going on in our family life. And so you stop coming to church? Yeah, it's just been a tough time. Well, that's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard, buddy. So you're going through a tough time, so we cut out what our goals and values are. How many people have lost people in the growth group? Why? They're just going through a tough stretch and you step away. I've been really sick. What's the doctor said? Oh, I've gotten really sick, so we decided not to go to the doctor. But man, we do it, don't we? We go through a tough stretch, and what do? We start cutting the God lines. We stop hanging out where we're getting his direction. And not that our church has the answers, but we try to center on the God and the Bible that has the answers. And people, if you're going through a tough time, don't cut your goals and values. If you're going through a tough time, don't stop serving. If you're going through a tough time, don't stop giving. If you're going through a tough time, don't stop being generous. If you're going through a tough time, don't lose sight of your spiritual goals and values. In fact, I would say, in the toughest and darkest storms, make sure that is exactly what you're going to focus on. We get into our current economic situation, the first thing I want to do is just stop giving, stop being generous. I mean, God understands. Look what's happening right now. And I just told Amy, look, where we're heading and what's going on, I want to do the church's automatic withdrawal system. I get paid every 15th and 30th. That's the way I work. And so I just want to take it out right off the top. Otherwise, I know I'm going to get down to the end of the month and he's going to get the smallest piece of the pie, if he gets any pie at all. And I forget the fact of a God that says, Chris, I've given you life and abilities and gifts and freedom, and I'm going to let you take 90%. 90%? You're the craziest business partner ever. And God's like, yeah, but I love you. And then I get in there and go, I'm taking your 10%. Why am I giving to you? I mean, I'm the one doing this. And in tough times, we lose sight. We drift from our goals and values. We throw away what's valuable. I love three different times they have to throw stuff overboard. Here's my worry. In a time like this and what we're going through, we start throwing away what's valuable. You know what takes the brunt of most of the storm? Our marriages. It can be health, it can be financial, it can be job-related, it can be relationships, it can be in-laws, it can be battle, it can be friction, whatever. But I tell you what, it's the marriages that take and pay the price. It seems like in the storm, we start throwing away what's valuable, and we forget the people God has given us, the most important ministry, and the most important things I have in life. And those are things I got to make sure I just don't throw overboard at this time. In fact, I got to work doubly hard on, because we're going to get tossed around pretty good right now. And I got to make sure I don't weather this thing and look back and go, well, somewhere along the way I lost them, but I made it out. We lose in the storm our hope. Verse 20, Luke says it. We finally all gave up hope of being saved. Things will never change. I guess this is the way it'll always be. I guess this is what's supposed to happen. Now here, if you want to take a positive approach in maybe a current crisis or storm you're going through, or just to jot down and put this somewhere on the refrigerator because you know one might be coming this year, unfortunately, that's the deal with storms. What we can gain in the storm, number one, to remember whose I am and whom I serve. I don't even know if that's great English, but it's written in the Bible. Last night, an angel of God came, whose I am and whom I serve, and stood beside me. Paul says, you know what I lose sight of sometimes? I get so caught up in what the current crisis is, I forget whose I am. I forget who I serve. I forget I have a purpose. And those are the things that I have to gain in the storm, that I have God's presence. I have His promise, and I have a purpose. I have God's presence. I have God's promise. And Paul says, that's all I have to go by. And therefore, I have a purpose. And I will stand, and I will give thanks in the midst of this. Which is what else we gain in the storm, is the big picture. I don't care how tough things are right now. I guarantee you, just by the fact that you're here today and where we live, 85%, get that, 85% of the world's population would give anything to be in your storm if they could trade it with theirs. We forget how wealthy we are. Because in the storm, I just take inventory of my own ship and what I have. 85% is being generous. I think the vast majority of you have electricity, running water, a vehicle to your name, I don't care how well it runs, a place to stay and live, and any sort of income that's making more than about $300 a month will definitely be in the top 9% of the world's population. And in the storm, sometimes I got to remember the big picture. I get so consumed, God, in who I am and what I'm going through, I forget the big picture. The reason I have a financial crisis is because I have finances. I actually have places in a bank that keeps my money. I'm freaking loaded, people. I have a house that can lose equity. Bam, that puts me in the top 10%. I forget these things. And what I gain is giving thanks. With the big picture in mind, there is always something to be thankful for. I think that's why 1 Thessalonians 5:16 says, "Be joyful always, pray continually, and give thanks in all circumstances / storms. For this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." Be joyful always. Always be praying to God. And always give thanks, regardless of what you're going through. That's God's will for you in the midst of whatever it is you're in the midst of. I think it comes down to simply this line. The bottom line is this. Do I believe God or do I believe in God? Now, before you make a bunch of noise with your note sheets and Bibles and getting ready to bail out, listen to that one for a second. Do you believe God or do you believe in God? Paul didn't stand up and say, guys, I'm going to be okay because I believe in God. Everyone in that day and age believed in a God. Paul stood up and says, I believe God. He said it. He wrote it. He spoke it. I believe it. End of story. I believe God. And people, there's a huge difference between believing God and believing in God. One says, my life and everything I am and everything I have will be directed to what God wants. And in the midst of that, then I will stand on His presence and His promise and say, I don't like it. I wish it was gone. But in the midst of it, I will still give thanks. I'm not going to get wrapped up in this boat and this ship that I'm on right now. The other one, simply believing in God, well, that's socially acceptable and politically correct. In fact, James even said, even the demons believe, they shudder, they shake, because they know God. It's cool to believe in God. But I tell you, I don't think that does squat. The difference is, do you believe God with your life, your finances, your relationship, your lack of relationships, with your future, with your degree, with your income, with all that you have? Do you really believe God? Because if you believe God, you will stand and say, here's what He says. Here's where I'm going. There's no way I'm going to get caught up in what's happening in the storms around me. I can still give thanks. And people, that's a huge difference than simply believing in God with a hand on Him and following whatever master you want and wondering why hopelessness and despair sets in more often than not. Maybe this is a great passage for this year. Whether it's something you're going through now or something that's bound to happen, in whatever venue you're watching or listening, just say, God, I don't want to believe in you. I want to believe you and your word and what you said. God, may this be a church, not as a group, but as individuals that believe you. For our marriages, for our relationships, for our kids, for our employment, for our employers, for our employees, God, may we believe you. For our finances, for our health scares,
God, for the hurts and pains, for the consequences that we still carry with us. May we have faith enough to stand in the midst of them and say, I believe you. And I have a life that demonstrates. May you give us that courage and wisdom in your name. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed today's study from God's Word. Pastor Chris will return in a moment with some final comments. For more information, or if you'd like additional copies, please contact us at area code 760-724-6700. Our mailing address is North Coast Church, 1132 North Melrose Drive, Vista, California, 92083. Or visit our website at www.northcoastchurch.com. Now here's Pastor Chris.
You know, I remember back that night in August of 1980 in Hurricane Allen, and I remember when those guys were running down from the church to help our family up out of the water. I remember there was one thought in my head, and that was simply, I really wish Dad was here. He's a giant of a man, especially in floods, and I really wished Dad was here. I think that's what chapter 27 is all about. In the midst of what's going on, not to believe there is a God, but to believe in God. And what he says, and understand his presence. Because the safest place to be in any storm is simply next to Dad. And that's the promise we have as Christians and followers who walk in obedience. Don't lose that this year. So turn around, greet another castaway, and we'll see you guys next week.